Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome to Willkommen, the official companion podcast to the spring 2023 production of Cabaret at the University of Kansas, running April 20th through April 30th at Stage 2 in the Craft and Pryor Theater in Murphy Hall. My name is Jonah Green. I am the associate director and dramaturg for the production, and I am also the host of this podcast. I'm so glad you're joining us for this first special episode. On most episodes of this podcast, I interview different members of the KU Cabaret production team, talking about subjects from directing to design to performing in the show. But this first episode is a bit different. In this episode, I'm going to take you through a mini dramaturgical presentation for this show. You may be asking, what is a dramaturg? A dramaturg wears many hats in a production, but one major role of the dramaturg is providing important context to the production team. For example, a dramaturg researches a show's production history, historical context, and clarifies any questions or confusions about content in the script. Most importantly, a dramaturg aids the production team in achieving the goals of the production, especially as it relates to what a production hopes the audience thinks or feels while watching the show. Dramaturgs dive into a show's themes, answering the question, what is this play about? And they make sure that the production is clearly communicating that message to the audience. In this podcast, I will start by providing a short, spoiler-free plot summary of Cabaret, followed by an overview of the musical's production history from its original Broadway premiere in 1966 to the film in 1972, all the way to today. Finally, I will highlight the big themes and ideas you should expect to encounter when seeing the University of Kansas production. Hopefully, this information gives you useful context when seeing the show. Okay, let's get started. The story of Cabaret takes place from 1929 to 1930 in Berlin, Germany. The play is set during the Weimar Republic, a post-World War I era in which Germany attempted to establish a democracy. In its golden era, the Weimar Republic was known for its over-the-top and excessive lifestyle. People felt free to express themselves politically, socially, and sexually. Artistic movements such as Expressionism and Dadaism flourished. And of course, cabarets were at the center of this artistic and sexual experimentation. But the Weimar Republic was also characterized by extreme economic depression, inflation, unemployment, and debt. By 1933, the end of the Weimar Republic, Germany quickly and horrifyingly transitioned from a progressive avant-garde culture to an oppressive, anti-Semitic, totalitarian regime under Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party. In Cabaret, Clifford Bradshaw, a struggling American author looking for inspiration for his next novel, arrives in Berlin on New Year's Eve in 1929. On his first night in Berlin, Cliff wanders into the Kit Kat Club, a seedy nightclub overseen by the strange, omniscient, and gender-bending master of ceremonies, the MC. There, Cliff meets Sally Bowles, a beautiful and captivating cabaret performer. Sally and Cliff begin a relationship which blossoms unexpectedly as Sally announces she is pregnant and they rejoice in the possibility of raising a child together. As time passes, however, the situation in Berlin changes from exciting and vibrant to ominous and violent. German friends turn out to be members of the Nazi Party, and a loving relationship between Herr Schultz, a Jewish-German fruit vendor, and Fräulein Schneider, a German boarding house owner, is violently threatened. I hesitate to say more without spoiling the details of the plot, but it's safe to say that, as the Nazis begin taking control of the German government, the atmosphere of the Kit Kat Club and the lives of Cliff, Sally, Schultz, and Schneider begin to change dramatically. As hate grows, some citizens remain oblivious or apathetic, while others sound the alarm or flee. Cabaret ultimately proclaims, "It can happen here," and compels us to ask ourselves, in this situation, what would you do? Mm-hmm. Cabaret has a long and fascinating production history. The musical's life started as Goodbye to Berlin, a semi-autobiographical novel published in 1939 by Anglo-American writer Christopher Isherwood. In his stories, Isherwood describes his adventures living in pre-1930 Berlin. While in Berlin, Isherwood lived with a 19-year-old British flapper named Jean Ross, an aspiring film actress who worked in second-rate cabarets. Ross was the inspiration for Sally Bowles, a central character in Isherwood's book, and later the star of the musical Cabaret. Isherwood's novel was first adapted to the stage by playwright John Van Druten in 1951. The play was called I Am a Camera. It ran for 214 performances on Broadway, and star Julie Harris, who played Sally Bowles, won her first of 5 career Tony Awards for Best Leading Actress in a Play. Then, Harold Prince, fresh off producing the 1964 mega-Broadway hit Fiddler on the Roof, purchased the rights to both the Isherwood novel and the Van Druten play. Prince was developing his own musical version of the story, and he started by hiring Joe Mastroff, who had written the musical She Loves Me, to write the book. Then, Prince and Mastroff asked John Kander and Fred Ebb to write the music and lyrics. Kander and Ebb would eventually write 16 Broadway shows together, including Chicago, Kiss of the Spider-Woman, The Scottsboro Boys, and many more. But Cabaret was only their second Broadway show, the first being a relatively unsuccessful 1965 musical called Flora the Red Menace, which starred a scintillating Liza Minnelli in her Broadway debut. Minnelli will come back into our Cabaret story. With Harold Prince as both producer and director, the original Broadway production of Cabaret opened November 20th, 1966 at the Broadhurst Theater. In a 50-year anniversary feature of Cabaret, Playbill wrote, quote, "Cabaret notably broke with many time-tested musical theater conventions of its day, both in terms of content and form. Aside from a chorus of scantily clad Kit Kat girls and a plot that dealt frankly with anti-Semitism and abortion, the production also jettisoned a traditional overture and show curtain for an abruptly beginning opening number, Willkommen, and an exposed stage that featured a large mirror, reflecting the audience back onto themselves," end quote. The show featured many songs that have now become celebrated staples of American musical theater and pushed the musical theater form to the edges of its boundaries. The original production was a massive success, running for 1,166 performances on Broadway and winning 8 1967 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, Score, Director, Choreographer, and Featured Actor Awards for Joel Grey as the MC and Peg Murray as Fräulein Kost. Note also that Jill Hayworth originated the musical role of Sally Bowles in this production, while Lottie Lenya starred as Fräulein Schneider. Lenya, interestingly, was married to Kurt Weill, a Jewish-German composer who collaborated with theater artist Bertolt Brecht in Germany, writing plays such as The Three-Penny Opera. Weill fled Nazi Germany in 1933 and died of a heart attack in 1950, but the casting of his wife, Lenya, in the original production forever created a tie between Weill, whose musical sound greatly influenced John Kander's score, and Cabaret the musical. After the original Broadway production, Cabaret received a few notable adaptations. In 1972, Bob Fosse directed a film adaptation, starring the aforementioned Liza Minnelli as Sally Bowles and Joel Grey as the MC. Some important changes were made in this movie, including changing the character Cliff to a British author named Brian. Fosse decided to incorporate Christopher Isherwood's real-life homosexuality into the character of Brian, who is bisexual in the film. Fosse also decided to cut all songs that occurred outside of the Kit Kat Club and added 3 new Kander and Ebb songs, Mein Herr, Money, and the infamous Maybe This Time. The movie was an enormous success, financially and critically. It won 8 1973 Academy Awards, including Best Director for Bob Fosse, Best Actress for Liza Minnelli, and Best Supporting Actor for Joel Grey, making him one of only 8 actors to win Tony and Oscar awards for playing the same role. In 1987, Cabaret returned to Broadway for the first time, in a production that was largely a remount of the original Broadway production, complete with its original Tony-winning star, Joel Grey. Some changes were made, however. Following the film adaptation, the Isherwood-inspired character of Cliff became openly bisexual, and other songs were removed and added. The most famous revival of Cabaret, though, comes from director Sam Mendes, who in 1993 restaged the musical in London's Donmar Warehouse. As Playbill writes, quote, Mendes's production set the entire show on stage at the Kit Kat Club, and he transformed Joel Grey's tuxedo-wearing master of ceremonies into the seedy, hypersexualized, and partially clothed Alan Cumming. Cliff's bisexuality became even more explicit. Some further song changes were made, but the most dramatic changes in Mendes's production was the dark, in-your-face tones were heightened to a new level. The Kit Kat Club was sleazier. Alcohol and drugs were seen all over the stage. And for the ending, Mendes had the MC remove his coat to reveal a concentration camp uniform, hinting at the approaching horrors of the Holocaust. Mendes's production, which was eventually co-directed by Rob Marshall, was produced on Broadway in 1998 by Roundabout Theatre Company. They performed in the former Henry Miller's Theater, which was, at the time, a real-life nightclub. Famously, patrons leaving evening performances of the 1998 cabaret walked past lines of people waiting to get in to the post-performance club space. This production was a fully immersive experience of a 1930s Weimar cabaret, starring Alan Cumming as the MC and Natasha Richardson taking on Sally Bowles, both of whom won Tony Awards. Since that revival, notable actresses such as Emma Stone, Michelle Williams, and Sienna Miller have played Sally Bowles in revivals of the 1998 production. Now, another celebrated revival of cabaret is running in London's West End, with original cast members including Jessie Buckley as Sally Bowles and Eddie Redmayne as the MC. Between stage and film, cabaret has seen multiple dramatic transformations in both its book, score, and staging. Each incarnation was groundbreaking for its time, but each new revision also pushed the envelope further and further in terms of both the authenticity of 1930s Weimar Germany, as well as emphasizing the dark themes of the play. As I've already teased, cabaret presents a number of big ideas and themes to audiences. It is undeniably a fun show, with iconic musical numbers, huge ensemble dances, and arguably one of the best scores in American musical theater history. But the play also challenges every person watching it, and the University of Kansas production will be no exception to that. To start, Cabaret is a musical about queer life, as it shows how underground cabarets in the Weimar Republic gave room for artistic freedom and expression. Cabarets became places to celebrate sexual liberation. Shows and cabarets combined dance, song, and drama, all of which were designed to provoke thought as well as entertain. Performances included political satire, sexual discussions, and sometimes even nude performances, often featuring risque jokes, lewd songs, men wearing powder and rouge, as well as short-haired women dressed in tuxedos, all offering images of a world seemingly turned upside down. These cabarets thrived for many years, but of course, after Adolf Hitler's rise to power and election as chancellor in 1933, cabarets began to close and become obsolete. Cabaret the Musical shows the heartbreaking loss of queer life and celebration that occurred as the Nazis took power in Germany. Additionally, another major theme of cabaret is its depiction of anti-Semitism, specifically the murder of 6 million European Jews by the Nazis in an event known as the Holocaust. In the 1930s, Germany's Jews, some 500,000 people, made up less than 1% of the German population. Most German Jews considered themselves loyal patriots, linked to the German way of life by language and culture. But this did not matter, as Hitler and the Nazis used Jews as the scapegoat for Germany's loss in World War I and the country's subsequent economic turmoil. Nazi anti-Jewish policy began with legal measures that expelled the Jews from society and stripped them of their rights and property, while simultaneously engaging in campaigns of incitement, abuse, terror, and violence of varying proportions. There was one goal: to make the Jews leave Germany. In September 1935, the Nuremberg Laws were passed, stripping the Jews of their citizenship and forbidding intermarriage between Jews and non-Jews. Jews were forced out of their occupations and banned from university. On November 9th through 10th, 1938, Nazi leaders unleashed a series of pogroms against the Jewish population in Germany. This day is called Kristallnacht, or the Night of Broken Glass, because of the shattered glass that littered the streets after the vandalism and destruction of Jewish-owned businesses, synagogues, and homes. Eventually, the Nazis implemented the final solution, a plan to exterminate all of the world's Jews. The policy resulted in the murder of 6 million Jewish people in concentration camps between 1941 and 1945. In 1939, 9.5 million Jews lived in European countries, meaning that roughly two-thirds of European Jews were murdered by May 1945. Cabaret never directly depicts the events of the Holocaust, but it certainly foreshadows them. And unfortunately, its story about anti-Semitism is deeply relevant to us as Americans today. In a report by the American Jewish Committee released in October 2021, one in four American Jews said that they had been targets of anti-Semitism in the last 12 months. 4 in 10 American Jews changed their behavior out of fear of anti-Semitism, and 82% of American Jews reported to have noticed a rise in anti-Semitism over the last 5 years. The Anti-Defamation League, who consistently tracks anti-Semitic trends, just reported the highest level of anti-Semitic incidents in America since their tracking began in 1979, a 34% increase over the previous year's record high. Between events such as Tree of Life, Charlottesville, hate crimes against Orthodox Jews in New York, the vile messages of Kanye West and Kyrie Irving, anti-Semitism is horribly alive and well in America today. We've even had to see anti-Semitism in relation to stories about Jewish figures while we've been rehearsing Cabaret. Most notably, there is currently a Broadway revival of the musical Parade, which dramatizes the life and tragic death of Leo Frank, a Jewish factory manager who lived in Georgia in the early 20th century. Frank was falsely convicted of murdering 13-year-old factory worker Mary Fagan. He was sentenced to life in prison, but Frank was then subsequently lynched by an angry anti-Semitic mob. Frank's murder led to the creation of the Anti-Defamation League. On February 21, 2023, the same night that we had our first rehearsal for this production of Cabaret, the Broadway production of Parade was having its first performance. As audiences arrived at the theater, a group of neo-Nazis stood a short distance away protesting the show, shouting hateful rhetoric and passing out flyers with anti-Semitic messages. The group was there to intimidate audience members who had arrived to see a show about an anti-Semitic incident in American history. As the parade producers said afterwards, quote, "If there is any remaining doubt out there about the urgency of telling this story in this moment in history, the vileness on display tonight should put it to rest. We stand by the valiant Broadway cast that brings this vital story to life each night," end quote. The same goes for our production of Cabaret, which also deals frankly with how anti-Semitism and hate grows. The show, especially in its famous second act number, If You Could See Her, shows how anti-Jewish racism grew out of an environment of apathy. Without giving away too much, this musical asks important questions about how evil is allowed to rise in our society, how hatred becomes popular and normalized, and how too often we are bystanders when we should be actively involved in stopping the spread of hate and oppression. Sam Mendes, director of the famous 1998 revival, summed up Cabaret best when he said, quote, "Cabaret uses the entertainment, the atmosphere, the lure and allure of the club to pull the audience in and show them what they have become part of by sitting and watching it," end quote. The show refuses to pander to its audience, shows how fascism arises out of the curtailing of free speech and political dissent, and seduces the audience before provoking them to reflect on what they've been seduced by. As we've said throughout this rehearsal process, this show, The Kit Kat Club, and Weimar Germany is fun, until it's not. I hope that you've learned something from this mini dramaturgy presentation and that you have the context to fully enjoy and understand the University of Kansas's production of Cabaret. You will laugh, you will delight in the talent of our cast, you will be wowed by big production numbers, and you will be made to think about important, relevant themes. Be sure to tune into the rest of the episodes in this podcast, which feature interviews with various members of the KU Cabaret team, where we dive more into this story and this KU production. Thank you again to everyone listening, and a reminder, if you haven't yet, go get your tickets for Cabaret at the University of Kansas, running April 20th through April 30th on Stage 2 in the Kraft and Pryor Theater in Murphy Hall. You can either get tickets in person at the University Theater box office in Murphy Hall by calling the box office at 785-864-3982 or online at kutheater.com. We hope that you come dance with us in the Kit Kat Club very soon. So long.